sorry, babe. I'm sorry, Mr. Cyphers. I usually don't get involved in anything really heavy. I usually handle small-time stuff, insurance jobs, divorces, things of that nature. I get lucky sometimes I handle people. But I don't know, Carooners or anybody famous, you know?
His real name was Liebling.
I got a thing about chickens. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. Film Sack episode 275. This is the show that mines the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. My name is Scott Johnson. I'm joined tonight by Brian Scrub That Wall with Blood Water Dunaway.
Oh, hi.
Blood Water.
Oh, blah, blah, blah. Okay. I've been trying to wrap my head around the movie we just watched. So am I to understand that Robert De Niro is the devil?
Yes.
And it's not Ben Franklin like proposed by Mama Boucher. Because if that's the case, I may have to go rethink some things. Hold on a second. Can you guys hold on a second? I'm getting a call.
Okay.
Hey, yeah. No, thank you, Mr. Devil. Yeah, that was the best intro ever. Yeah. It's all yours. I don't even need it. See you after the show. Yeah, let's meet at KFC. Sounds good. All right, bye.
All right. The devil at KFC.
I'm telling you, he sounds just like Ben Franklin.
The devil is KFC, by the way.
Yeah.
Also with us, Randy, what's up with that nose guard thing? Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. Did I ever tell you guys about the time I worked as a professional toucher?
No.
This is a true story. It's a job.
I knew about the touching. I just didn't know about the professional part. Yeah.
It's a job that's a variety of private investigator. Only your main role in people's lives is to touch everything. In a room I've never been before, I touch all the objects. If I'm in a barnyard with some chickens, I somehow touch all the chickens. Walking past a strange child on the stairs. Hell, I was once trying to escape some inexplicably random henchmen, and there was this parade going on, and rather than run down the empty sidewalk, I touched every single person marching in the parade. I'm touching all three of you right now, and myself. I know who I am!
Touch the doctor, bring him in closer, touch him on the face.
Mm-hmm. Feeling a little dirty now. Finally with us, Brian, chicken blood on the face, Ibbot.
So, if you think Louis Cypher is maybe just, I don't know, a little bit too obvious,
yeah.
Here's some of the more obvious ones that they didn't include. First initial B, middle initial L, last name Z-Bub. Shay Tan, that's a personal favorite.
Yeah.
And, of course, Prince Odar Kinnes.
Nice. Nice. Beelzebub.
Yeah. Beelzebub.
That's my favorite.
What's his name? First initial B, middle initial L, Z-Bub.
I'll bet you every one of those names has been used for the devil in a better movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
All right, so the movie's Angel Art. Angel Heart. Not Angel Art.
Angel Art.
Angel Art. Just a brief little backstory on this. This is a movie that Brian Ibbot and I have talked about for ages back and forth inside and outside of podcasts, because my only memory of Angel Heart was my new Mickey Rourke was in it. I'd forgotten that Robert De Niro was in it at all. But I really just knew Mickey Rourke in kind of a cool zoot suit looking suit. And I remembered Lisa Bonet with a gun up her choo-cha.
Wait, did you see the X-rated version?
Well, I thought
it's never shown. It's the version we watched.
No, I thought, unless this exists in footage I'm unaware of, I always thought that was the whole crux of the controversy, was that a gun went off in her baby maker there.
This movie was rated X, or it tried to get an X, and then they had to do it down to rated R. We watched the Netflix version, which is R, but there is an X version out there.
Oh, I wonder.
I thought the controversy was because Bill Cosby was like, no, I'm the person who does the drugs. I'm sorry. I was the only one who gets
to see Lisa Bonet naked.
Right. I was going to avoid the Cosby thing.
Lisa Bonet.
Right. I was going to avoid the Cosby topic because I didn't want to go to hell for reals with the devil. So
we're going to talk about Bill Cosby on this episode.
Yeah, yeah. No, but back in, okay, so when this was made, that was the big controversy, though. So this is 86, 87. And by the way, just to say up front before I forget to say it, I think this movie looks really, really good for being this old.
Oh, yeah.
I'm surprised how well it holds up visually. It's probably because it's a period piece set in the 50s, and they did a good job of making it feel that way.
That's the thing about this movie. You're watching this going, it does not have any reason to be this good.
Yeah, like, I agree.
In terms of production value. Mm-hmm. It just, like, everything you know about this movie, everything you expect, and quite frankly, the script is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, it has no business being as good as it is.
There's so much, there's so much extra stuff in the script. I've seen this movie probably... I don't know, a dozen times.
That is an unhealthy amount of times.
No, we now listen. Amount of times. Now we know why you weren't watching Dukes of Hazzard and A-Team and everything
I have so many questions for Brian Hibbett.
No problem. And I'll probably answer it in this initial thing. Why have I seen it so many times? Because whenever I find a friend or someone I know, you know, whatever, that has not seen this movie, I watch it with them because I want to get their perspective on it. It's not that I'm like, all right, well, let's see, I'm in a really good mood, what should I watch?
So
You're trying to fill out your is that definition of how a person responds to this movie. Now I think we all have these movies. I have movies that I show friends that I'm like, or people who are becoming my friend, and go, I want to see how this friend reacts if this is going to be a long-term relationship.
Mine is Dances with Wolves.
Wow.
I'm freaking out right now.
I would fail your movie test, Randy, because I would just sit there and go, John Dunbar.
Yeah. I mean, I have a new one this year that I do that a lot with. But in the past, my go-to has always been a little movie called Avalon, which I've talked about on the show before.
Sure.
Right, right.
And so I totally understand that thing where...
And it's less of like a test, like saying, all right, let's see if they pass the Angel Heart test. And it's more of like you haven't seen this? For me, it's like this hidden gem that was like... didn't make any impact in the theaters. When people list off Mickey Rourke movies, they're always talking about 9.5 Weeks Iron Man 2, the one where he has sex all over Rio de Janeiro. I can't remember the name of that.
The Wrestler is what I always
think. The Wrestler, sure. There we go. That would
the modern
Academy Award nominated one.
Yeah, the modern incarnations of what used to be Mickey Rourke. Like
Diner.
If you look at him now, there are some plastic surgery decisions that were made at some point that are dubious at best.
And it's funny because he did a movie called Handsome Jack or something like that.
Okay. Handsome Jack.
Johnny Handsome.
You're close.
Johnny Handsome? Harry Handsome.
Harry Handsome. Harry Angel, by the way, is my favorite name ever.
Harry Angel, yeah. I want to draw a picture of Harry Angel.
But... we gotta come back to that. But I'm so interested in Brian Hibbett. It's having seen this movie more than a couple times because I've now seen this movie 2 times in the last 2 days. Mm-hmm. And I'm just mystified. I don't think it's that good. It definitely doesn't have a reason to ever be seen again in my life.
Really?
I don't see asking other people to watch it. I feel kind of bad that FilmSack is implicitly asking people to watch it.
There's so much cool symbolism for me in the film, and I pick up it's one of those things where maybe I don't pick up something new every time, but often I'll see something new and be like, "Oh, yeah, okay, you know that." Like
the fans
are whenever Satan is in the room, whenever he is guiding Harry's hand into doing something.
And that's when they slow down, get slower, right? Isn't that the deal? Right,
exactly. Right. Or they change direction, or they start spinning if they were stopped.
Right.
When he's pleasing himself, that's when the fans are really like, devil's all up in there.
I mean,
that makes sense.
It has a tone to it that is undeniably different. I don't know too many movies that are like this, and it's funny that I don't remember it very well, but really, so I'm kind of the opposite of Randy. I came away surprised how surprised how good it looks and how well it holds up as a movie from that era. There's no synthy weird Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean bad synthy soundtrack. It's got some synth in it, but it's kind of well used. It's
it's a love letter to Southern jazz.
It's got a lot of sax. It's got a lot of saxophone in
it. But even the bits where there's like a heartbeat sound and he's just sort of creepily.
When I hear
around.
A heartbeat and a saxophone, I'm thinking Huey Lewis.
Sure.
Oh, totally.
Let's go.
The heart of rock and roll, baby.
That entire movie, Brian Ibbett, please tell me when you watch this movie, you're like,
I have never ever made that connection, but now that you say that, gosh. I don't know how to be able to not hear it now.
Yeah.
But in the heart of rock and roll is New Orleans.
Still beat.
Yeah, that's right. And from what I seen, I believe them, because it was this movie references that for me at least five times. Man, they're going back to the heartbeat well on this scene.
Yeah, they liked that. That was a motif they enjoyed. I'll tell you what, let's do this. Let's let Fletcher have his say, and then we'll dig in deep. So here you go.
Watch me soar, mother effer. Here we go. Angel Heart. A down-and-out 1950s Brooklyn gumshoe is hired to locate a pop singer who reneged on a debt. But each time he makes contact with someone who might know the singer's whereabouts, that person is killed in a horrible ritualistic fashion.
All right. Lovely. Now, he is, he's playing a character. He's good. Mickey Rourke, I like his deal. Like, his vibe, his thing, his acting style, I think is way cool. Sadly, the dude's, especially this time of his life, very self-destructive and was having a sort of rough go of it in the personal side of things, which is too bad. But his screen work is great. I found him completely compelling in this every time he would
delivery,
talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was great.
I think this Mickey Rourke during this time of his life was perfect for this role because the role fit his lifestyle. Just like I felt like Robert Downey Jr. when he first stepped into the Iron Man role, that was perfect. I'm like, yeah, anybody knows about being a rich drunk is freaking, he's right there.
I was so impressed with Mickey Rourke, the actor, his willingness to go for it. Yeah. There's a spot in this movie where for no reason whatsoever, and again, Brian, I think I think one of the reasons you like this movie is because it sidetracks itself all the time and with good results. It just suddenly he's on the run from some random henchman once again and decides to go out in the bayou and try to get away from them by buying some oysters or something.
It's funny you say that because during this watching, Tina and I are sitting there on the couch because he's like, oh, yeah, I'll watch that again. And I asked myself this question for the first time ever. Watching this film. Okay, when the first time he's getting chased, and it's the one you mentioned where he's running through the church and tripping over the chairs and then going through and awesome then knocking scene. Over the guy who's being carried down the down the streets.
That's a good example of a sidetrack where Mickey Rourke goes for it.
Right. And I leaned over to Tina and said, you know, I've seen this movie who knows how many times, maybe a dozen times. Why are they chasing him? Like, I have never been able to figure out who sent those two goons after him because they were apparently from the church, right? Because when he was about to reach. But why?
I mean, who is the lady in black?
The lady.
Did they answer that question?
Well, when he walked past her at the end, it looked up. That was De Niro in that.
That was
thing.
De Niro in the last time. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. I've done some thinking about this, and it's really flimsy. The allegory is really, really flimsy in this movie, and you don't want to overthink it.
Sure.
However, it is a movie that's clearly about a sort of basic Abrahamic God and his fallen demon Lucifer versus taboo, this different kind of religion. And that the taboo angels, so to speak, are those agents who keep popping up and trying to stop the fallen angel, Johnny Angel.
Taboo.
Harry Angel.
Voodoo, you mean?
Right, yes, voodoo. I'm saying there are these ephemeral voodoo agents who keep coming in trying to stop Angel from completing his task that he doesn't realize he's on. Mm. And
which is coming to grips with who he really is. I mean, that's, you know,
right.
De Niro, you know, Louis Cipher knows who Harry Angel is. And he's really just kind of like, all right, I'm going to dangle you on a string for a little while until you realize who you are so that I have the maximum impact when I finally, you know, send you to hell for reneging on the deal.
Typical Lucifer. Typical.
Right. Typical.
Yeah, he's so lazy. Why is the devil so lazy?
So wait a minute. Hold on.
It's all those eggs.
Maybe I'm confused about. So who's the singer? It's not him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a singer. Johnny's favorite. He's reincarnate of the singer.
Not a reincarnate. No, no, no. So Johnny, Johnny Favorite was this crooner, played with Toots Sweet and Spider Simpson or whatever the guys
were. Spider Simpson.
Wasn't getting the fame he wanted, but he was also dabbling in the arts, dabbling in the dark arts.
Right.
He hooks up with Krusemacher. What was her name? For someone who's seen this movie a bunch
Charlotte,
of times,
like
Ethan and Margaret.
Charlotte Rampling.
Yeah, Charlotte Rampling.
Oh, right.
Academy Award. Current Academy Award. Krusemacher.
Margaret Krusemacher.
Margaret Krusemacher and her father, Ethan.
Right, who she already has a special relationship with Lucifer.
That's right. He makes a deal somehow with the devil to exchange his soul for success
as a musician. This is correct. What musicians do, apparently.
Right. Exactly. Every musician does this.
Right.
Classic story. There's even a song about it. Charlie Daniels does a great job.
So he's successful. He becomes a big hit as Johnny Favorite. Then he decides he wants to get out of the deal with Satan. And this is actually, I'm sorry, this is when he hoops up with Margaret and Ethan and Toots Sweet. They go to Times Square, New Year's Eve, 1943. They find a soldier there. Grab him, pluck him out of the crowd, take him up to a hotel room where the fan is spinning like crazy and is the only red light in this whole wall of windows. Take out his heart. He eats his heart. He eats his heart and then basically takes Harry Angel's soul. Then he gets shipped off to war.
All right.
Kind of goes through some shell shocky kind of stuff. Comes
I
back.
I gotcha.
Doesn't
I was
remember
doing that
who
backwards.
He is.
Okay.
Okay.
And I forgot. Okay, so when they pull the guy out of the crowd, they take his dog tags. Johnny takes the dog tags, sticks them in a bottle. He's the only person who knows the dog tags, seals them up in a bottle, and gives it to Margaret.
What kind of commentary does it say about the film that it for adult men who are fairly well versed in movie watching have to have one person watch it 12 times to explain it?
That might be another reason that I've had to see this movie a bunch of times.
You know what? I don't hate that though. I kind of like a movie that does this to you, like where there's layers of it, you have to try to figure out like you're.
Yes and no, Scott, because the difference between the twist here, the realization of everything, and a twist in a movie like, say, I don't know, Unbreakable, is that it's so complicated that by the time you unravel it all as a viewer, you don't really care.
Like, well, I unraveled this early though. Like
For sure.
Man bun and beard devil. I mean,
yeah. Of the minute you see the guy, and he said this is a Louis Cipher. Oh, great, Lucifer.
Well, I didn't know that early. I was still sort of like, okay, whatever. This is just happening. But as it went on, and he started kind of going nuts, and then in that scene where I know I'm not supposed to be laughing, but in the scene where buckets of blood are filling up and blood's falling from the ceiling and he's
riding Lisa Bonet like a slip and slide.
Yeah, that was the worst butt scene ever made.
It really is.
That is not horrifying. How you perform sex.
It
Come on.
Horrifying.
I've seen it and I've also performed in it, and that is not how you do it.
No. He looks like a big lima bean. He looked like a lima bean flopping all over. It just looked terrible.
I just wanna say it's every scene in this movie, if you take it by itself, that one included, and it's the most famous scene in the film. It's the reason we ever heard about the movie.
It's because Bill Cosby said publicly how upset he was that his little Lisa Bonet actress went off and you shouldn't have done that. What's his voice?
It's so weird. Okay, all right. So many things, but I just want to say again, if you weren't of a certain age in 1987, the spring of 1987 specifically, you may not understand this movie was the biggest deal in entertainment news for a while. I'm not sure what to compare it to. Like, what movie is a big deal because it's controversial now? I don't know.
The other one right around the same time would have been The Last Temptation of Christ.
Anytime you have a child actress who everybody wants to see naked.
Well, she was in her 20s.
Crosses over
into... she was 19 when she made this.
Oh, I thought she was 21 or something.
Mm-mm. And when they cross over into that other field, that's when I think it gets that, you know, that generation is like, hey, let's go see this. I've been wanting to see her naked since forever.
Mm-hmm. But well, what was the movie with Franco where he's like a pimp down in Miami and it's like three current starlets or, you know, like pop princesses?
Oh,
or
kind of What was it? Oh my gosh. Wow.
It's like 2 years ago. And it's funny because I thought that that would have a bigger fallout. Hold on.
Spring Breakers.
Yes.
That was it.
And it's like,
and it was huge to this generation that was growing up with that, but to us, probably not as much. But I mean, I just
feel like it needs to be said. There is nothing in 2016 to compare to this sort of controversy of a film, because nowadays, if I come along and say, hey, Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen are turning 18 and they're going to probably be naked in a little while, you're like, yawn, so what? Everybody is. You don't understand.
Miss that plus.
You don't understand how remarkable it was.
To their credit, they have yet to be naked, by the way.
They're in their 30s now, but I'm just saying.
I'm sure they're naked at home. You're talking about
I'm sure they've done that. There we go. Yeah. Selena Gomez, Vanessa Hudgens, Ashley Benson, who are like, you know, Disney, Nickelodeon kind of stars and you know, but this one didn't have Spring Breakers 2012, which I thought it was more recent than that. Didn't have the kind of controversy.
No, not even close.
But had it come out then, maybe it's just the word desensitized, because had it come out back then and you had Disney actresses and the equivalent of actresses on the Cosby Show playing prostitutes, I think it would have had more impact.
Yeah, this movie was rated X. It had to be re-edited to come down from X. So that kind of tells you how much more hardcore.
I don't know that says much, because the MPAA is absolutely full of shit. And as you go back in time, they're even more. But what I was going to say is, what surprises me watching this movie for the first time is that the controversy was so big. It really stuck with me. 30 years, I've been wondering, what was that thing that happened back in the spring of 87 with Lisa Bonet? And then I go watch the movie, and it's actually pretty seriously and artistically handled. Like, it's not the nonsense that I was expecting.
Well, but you kind of can't take it out of its time. Like, the sense that a lot of people had of it being this big exploitation for her, or her being a bad girl and going off and, you know, doing things in her career that she didn't need to, or whatever, that general sentiment that seemed to be floating around that thing, all had to do with people on Thursday nights watching this sitcom about a bunch of family values and her being one of the Cosby kids and working hard in school. And, you know, like this image was just, you know, it's just changed.
And we went from sweet, wholesome to going to be having the dirty, bloody sex with Mickey Rourke in a movie about the occult.
Yeah, and your death's going to involve a gun in the cha-cha, right?
Right.
Like,
well,
my point is, like, if you look at another movie that's similar to this,
Black Moan?
No.
Snake Moan.
I wouldn't count that, though, because that came after like Monster, and she did other stuff before that was controversial. But she wasn't. It's more like Elizabeth Berkley in the strip movie
Showgirls,
because she came from that better.
Right. That's probably a closer comparison.
You're reaching back 20 years. Nowadays you just can't. It's really hard to like come up with an example.
I got one.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I have one. It just hit me right in the face, like a big slap.
Like a
big rubber pointy finger, or a big foam rubber pointy finger hit me right in the face. It's just the Hannah Montana thing. It's the same kind
of
deal.
Cyrus.
Yeah, when you take somebody immediately, you pull them right out of their Disney Channel lifestyle and put them immediately into something controversial like this. Yeah. I don't recall
3 or 4 years ago there being any touchstone moment when everybody was like, oh my god, Miley Cyrus is in porn.
No,
it just didn't.
Well,
and if she had, it would have leaked onto the internet, people would have seen it, would not have been
it was, oh my gosh, you guys, Hannah Montana's naked on a wrecking ball, what the hell's going on here? That I think that
she's humping her foam finger is not good.
I honestly don't see how that has 1/10 of the controversy that this movie did in 1987.
Yeah.
And it's because times have changed. Everything's changed. There's just nothing like it anymore.
I don't disagree.
Is there anybody currently that hasn't done something like this, but that if they were to, it would generate this kind of controversy?
Let me just go to wholesomedisney.com.
Yeah, there can
I'm
be.
I'm saying there can't be, Brian.
There can be. There can be. Here's who could do it.
Disney players today?
No, who could do it. One or both of those Modern Family girls, if they did something crazy, you'd go,
You're way too girl-focused here. I'm talking about... No, seriously. I'm talking about
How about Daniel Radcliffe in some kind of stage show?
With his wiener out. Yeah, I know the one.
Right. Controversy. Like, the president got a blowjob in the Oval Office. That happened 20 years ago. Nobody cares anymore.
Saying we're sexually decentralized.
I guarantee you, if news came out tomorrow that President Barack Obama had his own version of Monica Lewinsky, that would be a gigantic controversy.
There would be some controversy.
I guarantee it. Nobody
shut up between now and.
Oh my gosh! Nobody. They would still try to impeach him. Nobody would not talk about it. It would be the biggest thing ever.
I did not. Have
so
sex.
You have finally gotten to the destination I was going for. Which is
we arrived.
Oh my God, this movie. I have these expectations, and then I see this. I finally see this scene, and you know what? Someone told her, "Don't shave your underarms. Don't shave your pubes. Don't." Yeah, but like, wait. There's these serious things. Like, we're don't look at the camera. We're not going to shoot you standing up. You're going to be kind of covered by Mickey Rourke this entire time. All these things that came together to make a scene, and it's a stupid scene with red water falling.
It is unnecessary, and I think. Well, we can talk about this later because I do want to let you finish this point. But I think Mickey Rourke must have a writer in his contract that says I have to have sex with at least two people per movie.
Well, this was right after 9.5 Weeks, which was like the most.
Same year.
Sexual awakening movie for our generation.
And then he did a couple movies after that. Wild Orchid, that's what I was trying to think of with Rio de Janeiro. Right. Did a couple after that where I think there was even like the controversy at the time was some of it real? Like, was it, did he Brown Bunny, whoever the lead actress is in that?
Brown Bunny. I forgot about that. There's another controversy, a little more recent one. I'm telling you, these things come up. I don't think it's that unusual. You just have to have the right.
I just don't think it has the power, though. I mean, Brown Bunny, pretty much you forgot about it.
Nine songs came out and nobody even heard of it for years. It actual unsimulated hardcore sex in a feature film.
Yeah, but these are actors and actresses nobody gives two poops about. I don't think that's the controversy. It's Lisa Bonet that is the controversy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. If this would have been anyone else. And it's
1987. Yeah, and it's 87. But it could have been any. If it was just some actress no one had heard of, I don't think anyone talks about it.
Oh, no, for sure, no.
That's the key here is you got like a notable who's in this thing. So I think there are lots of examples of people. Like you could say, all right, Jennifer Lawrence riding high. She's fourth Oscar nomination doing all this stuff. And then you could say her next movie is about X-rated star, what's her name, from the 1970s. And it features unsimulated sex. The world would lose their minds.
I think you guys can't I think we can't separate the sexuality part from the occult part. I think that we were seriously, our parents from the 80s were so concerned that, between Dungeons and Dragons and all the violence on TV and just everything that had to do with witches, the occult, anything, even earlier in the 80s, we saw Thriller come out with Michael Jackson. They had to have like a disclaimer at the top. It's like, hey, there's going to be some occult references in here. Oh, you mean like zombies and werewolves? I mean, come on, shit. And so I think we were much more sensitive to that kind of stuff at the time. And I think the combination of the two.
You're right about that generation. Like I have a mother-in-law who refuses to open a pack of playing cards. She has a very distinct belief that playing cards are connected to tarot cards, which are connected to the occult, which is a bunch of mumbo jumbo. When I grew up, of course, you're right. It was a bigger deal. People were like, worried about Dungeons and Dragons and all this stuff. My parents were weird though. They didn't seem to care about any of that. And so I didn't
let him go to hell. I don't care.
I didn't have any of that sense when I was growing up. So none of that stuff bothered me. None of that stuff had a stigma attached to it. So when something like this would come out, It was on me to either feel weirded out by it or not. And I remember this movie. What's weird is it weirded me out more yesterday than it did in 80, 8 or whenever I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's surprising to me because the only thing that stuck with me was apparently, Brian, it was the idea of getting shot in your
yeah, right, patootie. Exactly. Not necessarily seeing that visually, but just like having seen number one, the aftermath, and having the detective or the officer describe it so bluntly.
Yeah, that big gumbo eating freaking nasty stereotype of a cop in New Orleans.
I suppose that's your gun up her.
Did anybody not see a face in the gumbo coming when they walked by that big vat of bubbling?
Oh yeah, no, I immediately went. I know
how
that
goes. There's your first trope alert. Yeah. Chekhov's gumbo.
Oh wait,
Chekhov's gumbo.
Somebody's face is going in that gumbo.
Yeah. And also
a bunch of those, by the way.
Yeah. When he picks up the knife in Margaret's office and he's looking at it and stuff, it's like, okay, well, you know,
that's going somewhere.
One of the first times I saw this. Now, the first time I saw it, I will admit that I didn't pick up on Lewis Cipher being the devil.
I didn't either. I didn't even the second time through. That's how little I remember of it. It took me about, I don't know, probably a quarter of the way through the movie. I went, oh yeah, that's right. He's the devil. And okay, I got it. But at first I was like a new movie for me. Mm-hmm. And that weirded me out too, because my memory sucks.
I wonder if your first viewing you picked up on this and it is a trope.
Oh, hey, hold on. I got that right here. Here you go.
And it's a little on the nose for me, but the whole he touches everything as he goes throughout the movie because his name is Angel, so everything gets to be touched by an angel. And it's also a way of telling you he's an amnesiac because he's constantly touching things to try to help him understand what they are and try to remember what it is that he's seeing and feeling helps that somehow. Did you even notice?
I didn't pick up on that. I know I picked up on like the mirrors, like how every time the mirrors are very prominent, like he even hits a couple of them, like he smashes one. And obviously that's some on the nose symbolism right there, but I didn't.
Well, he was choking a Cosby kid to death there. You know, had to punch a mirror.
Yeah, finish things. That's like, that's a finish. That's an unhappy.
It's not just chickens. All animals are after him.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Right. Dogs.
By the way, I just love this one shot of Mickey Rourke on his back in a pile of live crawfish. I just imagine Mickey Rourke going, "Put more crawfish in this bed. I'm gonna lay on."
Wow. I gotta really be squirming.
There was a great scene early on when he was coming to see Lisa Bonet getting her hair washed for the first time. And he was coming up the path and the dog lurched at him.
Yeah.
It was actually a really good shot because it felt like a one take, almost like a goof. And they're like, no, that's perfect. We need the animals pissed. And like, it was really well done. And they held the shot for a long time and he kept walking up. Like I'm surprised how many modern filmmaking sensibilities there are in this. And this director, he did Mississippi Burning. He did, he did The Wall, for heaven's sakes.
Right. Alan Parker.
The one with Sharon Stone.
What's that one?
Oh gosh.
By the way, I want to make this point before I forget. The Olsen twins, they have a brother. His name is Trent. And you've never heard of him, and I'm just going to put a picture in Skype so you can enjoy Trent.
So you just Google that, people.
Yeah.
There's
Trent for you. But anyway,
Alan Parker is our director.
Yes, that's him.
Yeah,
responsible for
Mississippi Burning, Midnight Express.
Midnight Express. Yeah,
Bugsy Malone, The Commitments.
Oh yeah,
Evita, Fame.
Bugsy Malone. That's that. Bugsy Malone's the kids one I love with the shooting the pies and the squirt and the whatnot.
Squirt guns or foam guns or whatever.
He does the 50s really well. He does
Road to Wellville was his. Yeah, no kidding. He does a lot of period pieces. Look at that.
Yeah.
And Pink Floyd's The Wall.
Right.
I love that he directed that.
Yeah. Evita. That was the thing. He did. That was the Madonna deal, right? Where she don't cry for me, Argentina, that one.
Right. The Life of David Gale, the Kevin Spacey one.
Mm-hmm. Last thing he did was that, and that was 2003, and that's it. He has not done anything since.
And then he held hands with Robert De Niro and walked off.
What's the Sharon Stone movie we're looking at?
Here's a remarkable thing. Okay. I can't remember. I must be confusing him with someone else.
Mm.
Here's a remarkable thing about Alan Parker. He was given Order of the British Empire in 1995, and then 7 years later he was knighted. So he is Sir Alan Parker.
Oh wow!
Now think about that. This is just a director of mediocre, dramas. Like
not according to Ibbot.
Oh, I don't know. Mississippi Burning was Mississippi Burning was almost Best Picture, wasn't it?
That was
But I'm just saying, you know, like our recently deceased Alan Rickman did not get his OBE yet. He was 69. And I realized that not all successful artists in England are supposed to get their OBEs, but it's just one of those things now where if you're well known, it just kind of happens.
I'm a little surprised.
All day.
The Alan Rickman thing is actually a little surprising to me. Seems like he would be a prime candidate for that.
Mm-hmm. I think he'd be all like, no, I don't want that.
No, I don't
I don't know if you can deny the crown. I think if you're... I think if you're ordered, you're that's the whole point of the word order.
You don't turn it down.
Yeah.
I'll do it if you'll bring me those detonators.
Oh, God. No, no, don't give me that. Don't pin that on me. Oh, no, you're one of them.
Mel Clark.
I'm telling you, Alan Rickman was amazing. And it's really sad to me that because there are so many aging celebrities, we're going to have these huge stretches of time where every day another one and another one pass away.
Yeah, and it's going to mess with us because these are people we saw as a little bit of, they're a little immortal for our minds, right? Mm-hmm. Like we grew up with them. Whoever thought the guy who brilliantly played Hans Gruber in Die Hard, one of the greatest action films ever made, it would ever die. Like that just seems insane. Like when he was Snape, you're like, oh yeah, he's still here, still kicking it, man. He's never going away. That guy's gonna be here forever. Oh, there he is in Love Actually. Sweet. He even looks older, but he's never gonna die.
And shocking that he was 69, because when you watch the Harry Potter movies, you realize Snape is a contemporary of Harry's parents.
Yeah.
Right.
And so that puts him at maybe say 25 years older than Harry.
Yeah.
Right. That being played by someone who's 45 years older than Harry, you didn't realize it at the time.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like he looks a lot younger.
We need to pick a, and everyone at home's yelling Galaxy Quest. I still don't think that's a very sackable film.
I love
that movie, but I don't know what a good, we need to pick a Rickman movie. Maybe it's the Kevin Costner Robin Hood thing where he played the Sheriff of Nottingham. Yeah,
that'd be good.
Yeah.
I Galaxy Quest is streaming and everybody's watched it. I just don't know that there's much more to say about it.
Just that it's great.
It's just a great movie.
Yeah.
There's not much to talk about. I mean, it's because it's parody, and it's going to be us talking about
that's a hard
how well they executed the parody.
Yeah, and there's really only six movies of his streaming on Netflix. Lee Daniels, The Butler, Blow Dry, CBGB.
Really, The Butler's already out?
Yeah.
The Butler's already out.
Yeah.
CBGB, which is like a thing about the coming of the Ramones and all those other great bands in the 70s. Bottle Shock, Galaxy Quest, and Gambit, which sadly is not about a Cajun superhero.
Right, about to say.
What is Gambit about? Do we know what that is?
A curator plots some artistic revenge against his boss and finds the perfect woman to help. Why can't life imitate art?
Is this a
2012 stars?
I can hear what you're reading. That so let's go.
Colin
Firth, Cameron Diaz, and Alan Rickman.
So the
three people you'd never expect to see in a movie together.
Ever.
The film sack movie of that list for us to watch is Blow Dry. I think we need to think about it.
Okay. And Blow Dry is how old?
2001.
14 years.
Okay.
A once great hairstylist reduced to running a barbershop in a desolate English burg decides to take a shot at the National Hairdressing Championships.
Wow.
Alan Rickman, Natasha Richardson, Rachel Griffiths.
And Josh Hartnett. Haven't seen
Josh Hartnett,
well.
Who's not on the list.
And the list goes on. Yeah. You could name famous actors in that movie for an hour. It's
really?
Yeah, wow. Hugh Bonneville from Downton Abbey's in there. You got Bill Nye's in there. You got your bunch of other British names I've
Heidi
not heard
Klum
of.
Heidi Klum is in this movie. Wow. It just goes on and on.
All right.
Let's throw that on the list.
Put it on the list. We just need to get a little Rickman in there. And we also need to try to find one of the few.
Bowie that we haven't seen, maybe.
Yeah, like not Labyrinth because we've seen it, but like... I don't know. What else is he? He was in. Oh, you know what we should get?
Arthur
the Prestige.
And the Invisibles?
Or The Prestige.
The Prestige is great. Yeah.
He plays Nikola Tesla
right?
in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only
two David Bowie things that are streaming are Basquiat, about the artist, and Arthur and the Invisibles. An imaginative boy seeks solace in the world of Grandpa's garden where wild haired beings the size of a tooth reside.
I kind of am into that.
It's a little animated thing with Freddie Highmore, Madonna, and Jimmy Fallon.
How old is this?
Not that old.
I've not even heard of this.
2006.
Okay.
2006.
All right.
Also features Robert De Niro,
the devil,
Madonna, and David Bowie. Doing vocals or doing
All right.
I have put blow dry 3 weeks out. We'll do that later in February.
All right. Cool. I like it. Let's move on here. According to this, Robert De Niro's performance of his Devil Man was an impersonation of Martin Scorsese.
Which I can't see it.
I can't see it at all. I think either IMDb is lying.
Unless that's how Scorsese shells an egg.
Maybe.
That is, man, that egg thing. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to kill you.
I do
you.
That every
cut
time,
your nails.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Do you really?
Yes. Like I tap the egg a few places around it, and then I just roll it across the table, and it's like, wow, this Animals. Actually makes it so much easier to get the shell off.
But it's so annoying. I just want to just punch the devil. Just,
yeah, you got to make sure too that you wait till the opportune time to do that. So it's like, Tristan, could you come in here for a second? Tap, tap, tap. I'd like to talk to you about your grades at school. Tap, tap, tap.
Yeah.
What's this D?
Yeah, roll it up. Yeah. You know what they say about D's? They're like the soul. Nom, 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 nom.
Would you care for a soul? I mean an egg on the nose.
Speaking of his performance, Alan Parker claimed in an interview that Robert De Niro's performance as Louis Cypher was so eerie and realistic that he generally avoided him during his scenes, letting him just direct himself, he says.
Wow.
So
I'm
that's
just
a...
going to stand over here and you just direct yourself.
Do what you're doing, buddy.
So that's a trope.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. Deserves a sound. If it's a trope, it deserves a sound.
Yeah, it's a trope called something like the world's largest ham, when someone, basically carries a huge ham onto the set, and that's like they suck up every scene they're in, and you just can't look away, and you can't believe that they're not about to break character and start laughing and whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, Captain Kirk, he's the Captain Kirk of this movie.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There's always stories about that, like behind the scenes stories where somebody of De Niro stature comes on stage and or on scene and you're like, all right, you just need to let him chew things up and do what he does. Cause we can't control this beast. Yeah. We can only let him loose.
One of my favorite examples is Tim Curry. Mm. He just strolls out into a scene in a movie and you just like, oh my God, it's barely holding together now.
Yeah.
And it somehow does. It holds together, but the ham just flows.
Let the ham flow.
Let the ham flow.
That's
baby.
Right. Ham flow. There was talk of him. Oh, I know what it was. He had called De Niro to say, do you want to be this character in our movie? And De Niro said, did you make that Birdie movie? And the director said, yes. And I forget what the name of that thing was, but he said,
Birdie.
Is it Birdie? He said yes. And supposedly, he hung up on him. We didn't want to talk to him. He's like, I don't want to do this. This is, you suck. And then later got talked into it. Probably said, well, I need to pay my rent. So yeah, I'll be in your thing. Listen, I don't think De Niro's in any position anymore to be picky. He was in those freaking Meet the Fockers business. Mm-hmm. If you're going to do those poopy movies, you no longer are Mr. Untouchable guy. All right?
Right, right.
But yeah, he was still scary in this movie. I mean,
sure he was.
I found myself genuinely scared a couple of times.
Like, wore the contacts, though, or whatever.
Yeah, he may be the devil.
And the problem with hamming it up is that you do kind of diffuse some of your scariness.
Yeah.
Like, the seriousness is taken away when he has that twinkle in his eyes that's betrayed by the tiniest little grin starting to tug at his mouth. Like, he's not that scary.
No.
Come on.
He's not.
I'm scared.
I love De Niro.
When he shows up your house, we'll see how you feel about it.
I like that they went ahead. So one of my favorite things in the movie is Brownie McGee played Toot Sweet. I think you just keep it Brownie McGee.
Right, yeah.
That's Toot Sweet, man. Toot Sweet.
Toot Sweet's a terrible name.
Get on that, Toot Sweet.
Yeah, get on that, Toot Sweet. I think Brownie McGee is a better name. Should have just kept with that.
But he also had Spider Simpson or whatever.
Spider Simpson. I kept trying to make sure that's where I heard it. I was like, Spider, I heard that part. Simpson, was it, they say Simpson?
Spider Simpson.
You want, but great evidence that if you want someone to look like an old bluesman, just hire an old bluesman.
Yeah.
Right.
Boy, he fit that role.
I thought he was great. His dialogue, some of my favorite I captured. I'll play later, but
I'm just here to sell drinks. Come on, leave me alone.
Yeah, I like that guy a lot.
Guy can't even come in here and take a piss.
And then of course they used a stuntman to have Mickey Rourke beat the crap out of him.
This is what I
find fascinating about this movie, and you don't realize it till the very end. All of the actual violence you never see.
Mm-hmm.
None of the killings, the shooting a doctor through the eye and so forth, you never actually see it.
You just see the aftermath, and you
see more than twice as much violence as you actually see.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
And when they show it later, when we realize it was him doing all the murders, it's not showing the murders even then. It's just showing him with a knife in the air and coming down real quick. Yeah. Like
lighting a cigarette with Tootsweet's razor in his hand.
I find that kind of implied violence so much more. It seems obvious to say this now that I'm saying it, but so much more effective than actually showing
me. Yeah.
Like I would much rather. Well, I don't know if I'd rather have that, but that is if you're trying to get under my skin, that's how you do it. Mm-hmm. Like it's worse. It's a little worse that they just said that the gun was where it was at the end than if they showed a scene of Mickey Rourke pulling a trigger even off camera. Just the suggestion that something like that would happen to anyone was enough to obviously stick with me for years and have me believe I saw a scene where Lisa Bonet's, you know, potato was shot off.
Oh, this movie has a...
I like all the different euphemisms for that you come up with.
Well, I don't want to, you know, I can't just... There is a gun in your vagina. Like, I don't like that either. All right, I got a trope for you. Here's one. There's always weird shit happening in the South. It's always this wonderland of, on the surface, a bunch of people on porches smoking and just trying to just cool off from the hot day. But really, at night, it's a bunch of voodoo shit and everyone's mystic. And I love that.
But back in New Jersey, there's only one man on the beach.
Yep.
It's New Jersey's totally cool. Mm-hmm. Nothing. It's totally
filthy.
Normal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's the winter, isn't it? Wasn't it
winter time?
It was the last rays of sun, is what they were saying.
Yeah, but still, why would there be one dude and one gypsy lady out there?
Well, she was trying to take care of her varicose veins, and he was looking for no shields.
He found a bunch of no shields under
and
the
portal. He was just out there to scratch his scrot because he was. That's all he was doing.
Speaking of the Jersey Shore, there's a prototypical chick in a bucket in this movie.
Oh, I like those. Hold on, I got that. All right, who is
apparently it? Apparently, our Harry Angel has a girlfriend who's a good informant, and she comes over. She takes her clothes off, but he doesn't take his clothes off, doing something no man in a room with a naked woman has ever done.
I don't know, man. She was boring me to death with all that news report crap. Your boner in a minute.
She gives him all the information he needs while getting naked, and then she just stays there. The rest of the movie, she's just stuck in that room.
Yeah, naked. She is the definition of a chick in the bucket.
So here's the thing, though. Apparently there's deleted scenes or a deleted part of the screenplay. She dies. She's killed also.
Oh.
Spoiler
by him.
Same way by Harry guided by Lewis's hand.
Yeah.
But there was a Fangoria article or a Starlog article or something around that same time that showed Winesap being murdered and
The other apple.
Right.
Macintosh.
No,
seriously,
didn't say
their names are Winesap and Macintosh. I love those that kind of thing.
Right. And Granny Smith, she's the kind of old lady that makes coffee for them. But apparently, so Winesap is killed, and you hear about that in the devil's monologue at the end. And I guess you even see a little tiny snippet of it. And then apparently his girlfriend, the informant, the worst actress ever.
That was the worst, most painful scene.
It was, yeah.
That was,
and I think
bad.
It was because she was. I mean, what does she have to act on?
Give me a heart off.
So wait a minute. We've skipped over something I wrote here and I forgot to even mention it, but I'm still a little creeped out by it. And maybe this was where the controversy was, but if Lisa Bonet was only 19, she's playing 17. He's in his mid-30s now.
Yeah.
Actual 35. Actor guy. I don't know. That kind of thing makes me uncomfortable. I know it's all acting. Everyone's a consenting adult. I know you're on a stage, and I know it's his dumb white butt slipping and sliding all around the blood room and all that, but it's still just, I don't know, something creepy about that.
Well, this whole movie is about voodoo, incest, you know, violence. You remember, Mickey Rourke's supposed to be her dad, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean.
Mickey Rourke is her dad.
Oh,
yeah.
Wait. Oh. That's, I, ew, what? Gross.
Why did it take you?
Yeah, how come that wasn't the creepiest part?
I don't know why that didn't
you?
Hit me until just now.
He literally says that at the end of the movie.
See, there was some confusion on my part that I didn't think he was the musician. The movie, this is why Brian had to see it 12 times. There's stuff to figure out. And I'm a little slow on the uptake, clearly. But I didn't it wasn't clicking with me. Was she aware of this, though? She was never aware of
that. No. By the time she was aware, she was already in hell.
Oh, no wonder this movie was almost rated
X. This is the reason why her age had to be ratcheted down to 17 to make it understandable how a guy his age could have a daughter her age.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. Gross.
Is this movie a classic definition of a twofer?
If you watch this now, Scott, would you throw the disc out into the snow?
No. I mean, no.
Now, but you would tell me you'd throw a blanket over the television.
No, my dad would have. Yeah. For those who don't know what he's talking about, so just a little recap here.
Sorry.
When I saw Seven for the first time, I saw it on DVD back in the early DVD days. And I watched it with my then pregnant wife, who I was pregnant with our second daughter. And I want to spoil it. It's really old, but the end scene where Brad Pitt finds out what's in the box put me over the edge because it was about, there was a pregnancy and a death. Let's put it that way. And it really got me right where it hurts. And I took
in the box?
And I threw it in the snow. I was so mad. I've seen it since, by the way. I don't know if I've ever mentioned that. That's a great movie. But that ending, as tropey as that last ending, and it's not tropey, but as referential as it is now, everyone says, "What's in that box?" Anytime a box is mentioned, it's an amazing film, but it still gets me the last bit.
I would like you to combine these stories. So I would like you to be watching Seven at home with your pregnant wife and your dad, and he throws a blanket over the television, and you turn to him and say, "Dad, I'm married. I have a wife. You don't need to protect me from this."
Yeah. He was so bad at it. It would be, and it was always like a sex scene. Like it'd be, what was the old, that movie, I always bring this up, the one where they put things on their heads and they could go through other people's experiences.
Right.
Brainstorm.
Right. Brainstorm. Oh, right.
Brainstorm with,
Quaid? Dennis Quaid?
No, who's the guy? Who's the guy we always do impressions of? The freaking brain just went
dead. Christopher Walken.
Oh, right.
Natalie Wood and other. Yes, it's the movie where Natalie Wood died in the middle of it. No, we haven't seen it here yet.
Not yet.
No, I want to, though.
We're thinking that's the movie I'm confusing with, which is Dreamscape.
Dreamscape.
Oh, we did
that
do Dreamscape.
Kilmer? Oh, my God. I can't remember anything anymore.
That's Quaid.
That's Quaid.
I'm so lost now.
That's Quaid. Get to the chopper, Quaid. Did your dad have
like a blanket specifically sitting next to the TV?
Now that you say that, I kind of wonder. I don't know if he did or not. But the way it would work is, it was my mom who'd get really fuddy-duddy. She'd be like, no, come on. We're not watching. My dad's like, don't worry about it. If there's a scene, I'll take care of it, basically.
I've got the blanket.
And so as soon as a scene like that would come on, and in that movie, there was like a simulated, here's a somebody's sex experience tape we put on your head and had you watch or whatever. And my dad would just go, whoop. He'd hear him make that sound too. He'd go, whoop, yep, whoop. And he'd throw the blanket. Oftentimes it would knock a bunch of shit over, or the TV would fall off, or it wouldn't hit it'd miss.
If he was really forward thinking, he would have just suspended the blanket from the ceiling with weights on each of the four corners and had like a little pull string.
That would have been amazing.
Unfortunately, the air catches it and makes it float down really slow as he freaks out. Get down! Get!
And that was the best part, is his panic. It wasn't that it was,
So did he lose his mind and didn't... Was this pre-remote controls? Did he lose his mind because he couldn't get to the power button?
Some people... The rich kids had remote controls. My dad would keep my dad would keep TVs until they died, and that meant that we had some crap TV made in 1980.
My parents didn't have a remote control till the 21st century. Like, all through the 90s, no remote control.
They don't need that.
So actually, for those who don't know, back in the day, when you turn a TV off, it might take half a minute for it to turn off for it. Like,
right.
So a blanket would be better. Right.
Yeah, you would throw it over, and it would never work very well, and it didn't stop the sound, so if somebody was going, or whatever.
And your dad's he's like, I'm okay with that. I'm okay. With the sex sounds.
Reminds me of the first time I ever went to Utah as an adult.
This isn't a Utah thing.
This is an absolute true story. I was working for a software company, and our customers were banks. I went to Utah for the first time. I went to a particularly conservative part of Utah, Cedar City.
Oh, yeah.
So
College town, but also very conservative. Yeah.
Right. So this is about 2001, and the local ISP, I don't know if there was more than one, but the local ISP that we were working with was filtering the internet heavily. Mm. And this was a thing in Utah. I know if you're from somewhere else, you may not believe it, but this was a thing. The ISPs had blacklisted 2/3 of the internet.
That was not true in most of the state, but go ahead.
Okay, all right, whatever.
That may have been a local thing only, because that was I never ran into that in Salt Lake City, not once.
So what was really, really weird to me was that if you went to a website that you know they were going to prevent you from enjoying, you would see a flash of it in your browser before you would get redirected to a page that said you can't, you know, this is not served by your provider. And it was so freaking weird that you'd see a flash of it. You would just get it. It would just get loaded before it would go away. Mm. And I always think of that whenever you talk about your dad throwing a blanket over a television, because it's the same thing.
Kind
of,
yeah. It sounds like the ISP was throwing a virtual blanket over everybody's porn experience on the internet. But I have never, you've told this story before. I've never heard of that anywhere. So if Cedar City had that going on, I don't know what they were doing, but.
It was just a local, little ISP.
Yeah,
local,
must have been. 2001, thing. That would have been like, yeah, everybody was still on dial-up probably down there, right?
Probably.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been like DSL or something. Well, anyway.
Well, I mean, you know, in businesses, we were installing DSL lines. But anyway.
Oh, right. Anyway, point is, that scene with his naked butt slipping all over the place with the red blood is the most ridiculous thing ever, and laughed really hard.
It's the most unsexy sex scene ever filmed.
Yeah, it was gross.
Well, and that was my big point about the movie, and I just want to reiterate it. Like, Lisa Bonet had fully outgrown armpit hair. There was all of this kind of ugliness to their sex. It was not, you know, sensual and slow. The music was kind of sexy sax, but it didn't make any sense. The music was a little more discordant, you know?
Yeah, sexy sax. I like the sound of that.
Sexy sax.
They had a way of, I don't know. It's hard to explain. I mean, yeah, it's the South. It's dirty and sweaty down there.
Hey.
You know what it is. You know what I'm saying is true.
Hey.
You know what I'm saying is true. It's a hot, sweaty
even
mess.
I shave my pits. But seriously, though, during this time, during the late 80s, there was a resurgence of au naturel.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was kind of, that generation kind of had a statement about of that kind of thing.
I didn't know she's still married to Jason Momoa. I didn't know that.
Momoa.
Yeah. Freaking
Hawaiian actor.
Yeah. The Hawaiian actor guy was on, the Game of Thrones there.
Khal Drogo.
Yep.
And he was in, Atlantis, Stargate Atlantis.
Yeah. And that's where that was my favorite when he came on.
I love that. He was a great character on there. Ronan.
I can't wait to see him as everybody's favorite superhero.
Aquaman. Come on, fish, help me.
If you want to like Jason Momoa, don't ever see him get interviewed. That is a dumb human being.
Really?
He's so attractive.
Not to fulfill the stereotype, right?
If he was smart and that attractive, I don't think I could handle it.
He was on Baywatch, the show Baywatch, for a while.
Really?
That's the first place I think he got a job, because he was doing like surfer stuff then. Anyway, she was married to Lenny Kravitz for a little while, had one kid, got divorced. Then Kravitz went on to show his wiener on stage. Oh, is Zoe Kravitz isn't their kid, though?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a Bonet kid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she's in this year's finest movie ever made, The Mad Max Fury Road. She's one of
She was in Californication, too. She's really good.
Yeah. I didn't know that was her kid. How old is Lisa Bonet? She's like
49, 8.
Yeah, 48.
48,
like,
yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, she was good for her, I suppose. She looks lovely now, and looking at her now, she looks great.
Mm-hmm. Whereas Mickey Rourke has degenerated.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
He did not make a deal with the devil.
Well, I appreciate that he stopped the roids recently and became a more normal-sized man.
Yeah.
I looked at some
photos yesterday, and I'm really not sure what he's looking like right this second. Like where there's not very many recent photos. I hope he's okay. The most recent thing.
If your memory of him is of The Wrestler, he really bulked up for that movie, and he has kind of gone back to normal size.
He's so damn good looking in this film. Like in the 80s, before he got all weird and went off the deep end with the plastic surgery, and I used to have a motorcycle accident and stuff. I mean, he's a good looking guy. I mean, I think that he's
a real charmer too.
Totally. And he's potentially, like a Bruce Willis influence. Like I could see Bruce Willis being influenced by his mannerisms and tone and style of delivery.
I'm so glad you said that. 'Cause during the whole movie, and this is it's been a while since I've seen an old movie of his, Mm-hmm. The entire time I'm getting this vibe and I'm like, what is this remind me of? What does this remind me of? And now I know it's freaking it's John Bruce McClane. Willis. Yeah. It's totally Bruce Willis.
New Orleans, we'll have a few laughs. We'll have some gumbo.
Clay. Bill Clay.
I think he really deserves a lot of credit for what he did as a boxer. He started actually boxing in competitive fights later in life. Most men, you know, they start when they're 18 and they have a rise and fall before they're 25. This guy started in his 30s and won like his first 21 fights. And that's just remarkable. You can tell when you see him act later that he took a lot of shots to the head.
Yeah.
But it's amazing to go back and see him before and after that. Something like 21 consecutive fights to start his boxing career.
I find him very compelling even now. Like when he does something now, like you can't take your eyes off him in that Expendables movie. He's just fascinating. You know, he's the best thing in Iron Man 2, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of that movie's not that great. But
Sin City is really good in.
Yeah. In fact, Sin City was like that moment where you're like, oh, Mickey Rourke might be back, everybody.
Ricky, right. Mickey Rourke, yeah. Ricky, Mickey Rourke. Mickey Rourke.
Which also had Bruce Willis.
Yeah, it did, didn't it? Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, finally the two came together.
Finally.
So there's a scene that I don't think I was supposed to laugh at, but I did. But there's a scene where a horse kicked a dog across the barn. Yeah.
That was great. I was so glad.
Did that mean that the horses were pro Satan and the dogs were pro voodoo?
Horses are out for themselves, man. If you don't know this, horses are the most evil creatures.
Horses are dicks.
They're just dicks. They really are.
Okay.
I think that there is something to that. I don't, not that necessarily horses are dicks. I'm saying that there is something to the theory that Lucifer didn't want anything, you know, didn't want Harry Angel to get killed prematurely. So there was a little bit of quote unquote divine intervention by him to make sure that he didn't get beat up too much or killed or anything before had a chance to realize.
But I like how the devil turned that around and like, hey, I'm going to save you, but you know what? You know those chickens you really hate? You're going to have to run through like a minefield full of those next.
You're going to have to spin around like you're Tyler Moore at the beginning of your show in a field of chickens.
So for him, it was like Indiana Jones and snakes for him, right? Yeah.
It was.
Yeah. Well, sort of. It had a darker tone to why he was scared of him, not just because, you know, what's his name?
No, he was scared because Lisa Bonet kept cutting him up and then blurting the blood all over and then getting the dirt. And like, Jesus.
That was the worst. That was the hardest scene. I mean, as much as that bedroom scene was gross, that was the worst scene for me.
Yeah, and then she was dry humping. I couldn't tell what person it was, but she was dry humping some person on the ground after eating dirt.
Just eating dirt, dude. Ugh. It's the dirt. It's not even the chicken blood for me. It's putting your mouth on the dirt. Yeah. Why would you do that?
The ashes, it was white. It was like... it was like ashes or something.
Perfect. Oh. Perfect. Just the meal.
Not better than dirt, but I'm just saying.
Even better. Burnt dirt.
Just Cajun cooking is basically what she was.
All right. Any other notable things before we clippy clip?
I got a question for Ibbot, since he has watched the movie much more than me. And you know, I'm a big symbolism kind of guy too. Yeah, yeah. I love those motif symbolism.
Oh, yeah, we haven't really talked about a lot of the symbolism. Yes.
Right. And so the only other thing, you know, I had the fans and there's chickens and stuff in there, but there was one thing that I didn't understand that I couldn't understand the phone book. Why was there so many references to phone books? Is it because they're so distant from us now?
I have no idea. I didn't know there was references. I thought it was like, all right, Dunaway going to bring up like the stairs, you know, the elevator always goes down and that's, you know, to hell. The stairs always go up and it's a slower climb.
Those were obvious. It was the phone book that was getting me because I couldn't tell if it was because we're so disconnected from phone books that I noticed them so much, or was it because they kept reoccurring for like 3 or 4 times in the movie? There was like phone books. He even mentions his name is in the phone book as Harry R. Angel.
Yeah,
like in a phone book. And I'm like,
I R an angel. Hey, he's slow down to make sure you get it, audience.
Exactly. And so I thought about that. Then I was like, is that because at one point in time we were afraid that we're all getting numbers? Is that the mark of the beast? And I was thinking, I'm thinking way too hard.
Yeah.
I'm thinking I need to ask Ibbot, but no, you got nothing, huh? All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I did not pick up on there being.
My sense of that is that the devil has lists, you know, There's going to be a list that gets checked when you approach the gates of heaven, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. He's like Santa Claus in that way.
And, you know,
and I'm kicking it twice. You're going to hell. But you ain't been nice. Do, 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 do. I'm the devil.
I want that song to be the new traditional Christmas song that I sing every year. All right, well, let's play some clips. I got some lined up here. These include this one about I don't know what. Here it is.
Of course I know what an attorney is. Yeah, it's like a lawyer, only the bills are bigger.
Yeah, get it? He is very Bruce Willis. Wow.
Which movie hates lawyers more, this one or Jurassic Park?
Oh. Well, which one had one get bitten off a toilet by a giant T-Rex?
That was pretty good.
Oh. Well, that's
interesting.
Yeah. We really don't know what happened to Winesap.
Because there are movies that love lawyers, like Intolerable Cruelty or...
Lincoln Lawyer.
Where
Matthew McConaughey rides around in a Lincoln.
Yeah.
By the way, you know, everybody who watches this movie on Netflix is going to suggest you watch Devil's Advocate.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
Very similar.
I kept thinking De Niro was in that, but he's not.
Nope.
He is the other one.
Give me a synopsis.
Al Pacino. Al Pacino. Yeah. And then I went down a rabbit hole of Dustin Hoffman was the devil in The Messenger. And I was thinking, who is my favorite devil of all time?
Yeah. Plus, those guys are all from the same school and period of acting. Like,
yeah.
Those three actors. In fact, why isn't there a movie with those three in it? Where they're old and in Vegas or something. Like, what's going on?
I'm sure they're probably just missed it.
There ought to be.
Isn't that Last Vegas? Isn't that what you're joking?
That's what I was thinking.
Well, you've got, okay, but those three actors, like, okay, so
not Pacino. You've got De Niro, Morgan Freeman. I mean, it's a bunch of old actors who go to Las Vegas.
Yeah, but De Niro's not in that, is he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Are you sure? I think that's.
He's like the main guy.
That's Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas is the main guy, but Robert De Niro's like the second main guy.
I don't think he's in that.
Yes,
it's him.
It's
Morgan
De Niro,
Freeman,
Douglas, Morgan Freeman, and
another old
fish
fart.
Called Wanda. Kevin Kline.
Oh, right. But where's De Niro in that?
He was the second name I said. Michael Douglas, Robert De Niro.
No,
Morgan Freeman.
I know what you said. I'm just trying to figure out what's that called. Last Vegas, or what is it?
Last Vegas.
Vegas.
Which is really
basically
a couple of guys said. We should film a movie in Vegas so that we can get a paid trip to Vegas.
I did not know Robert De Niro was in that.
Yeah.
I thought it was just some other old fart actor.
Old fart actor.
Nope, it's that specific old fart actor.
All right.
So, okay, who's your favorite devil in any movie?
Oh.
Actor.
Good question.
Bill Cosby in The Devil and Max Devlin.
Elizabeth Hurley in that movie with Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Bedazzled.
Bedazzled.
She was good in that, actually.
She was really good.
Randy, what you got?
I'm thinking, hold on.
Actually, I don't like the Bill Cosby one, but keep going. I have one.
You just stole mine.
I have one. I'll wait for Randy. I have a perfect one.
I'm going to go ahead and give you mine while Randy thinks about his. I think Constantine, our favorite Peter Stormare.
I haven't seen that.
Haven't seen Constantine?
We need to. It's on Netflix,
I think,
you guys.
It's on Netflix right now.
Bump that up. Bump that shit up, because we need to see that.
Bump that shit up.
Put it to the top, Randy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's in our list? Cool.
We need to watch that bad.
Yeah.
Which one?
Constantine.
Oh, okay. So you just took Peter Stormare. Let's see.
Yeah, that one's my favorite.
I've got one. I'll tell you mine while Randy looks. I want to say...
Okay, I've got it.
Okay, go ahead.
I know who it is. But like the perfect casting in a movie that was based on a book about the devil, I'm going with Max von Sydow in Needful Things.
Oh, that's pretty good.
He is... He is exactly what I'm talking about.
I thought the rumor was he was another incarnation of the Man in Black. No, I didn't know he was the devil.
No, he is Satan.
Oh, I don't remember that book very well.
It's revealed at the end. Sorry, folks. There's someone out there who's reading this book for the first time right now. Sorry.
Right,
right. Yeah. The devil.
I can't believe.
I don't think it changes the book. The book's book's about the journey anyway. So. I don't think it's that big of a reveal. So I don't think we spoil anybody. For me, okay, easily my favorite devil is the guy in Time Bandits.
Oh, yeah.
Time Bandits.
David Warner's character. Right. I love that guy.
Yeah.
He's my kind of devil. And I also like the god guy that came in later and saved all the midgets from trouble. He's great, too. All right, let's play this next clip.
Can't
about
wait for the emails.
Weird De Niro.
I don't want to appear rude or impolite, but do you have any ID, stuff like that, before we begin?
Monotone man talking like this.
I just want to make sure that you're really Harry Angel.
This is nothing like Martin Scorsese. I don't know why IMDb says that.
Boy, IDs weren't very secure back then, were they?
No, they weren't.
They were not.
Well, you know, it was and wasn't. It was a lot harder to run down to the local Kinko's and print up something fake. So just about everything looked official. Anything that looked printed probably looked official.
Yep. Here's a reminder to eat your vegetables.
But you know how these things are. He remained a vegetable and my contract was never honored.
Okay.
Great. We're never honored. Uh-huh. Vegetables.
There's a lot of this sound in the movie. Heart of rock and roll's to beat in. They really like that.
That is actually perfect.
Detroit, Hollywood, the Sunset Strip. I like that song.
Thank you for going there. Whole freaking movie.
There it is.
Okay, best Rourke moment, I thought. I like this.
Hiya, Johnny. Where the fuck are you?
That's barely a beep. Barely a beep in there.
Right.
I may as well have not beeped at it, so listen.
Hiya, Johnny. Where the fuck are you?
Right. Well, he's so much that, F that yeah, it almost goes that, right to the K without any, any U in there.
He drags that F for 3 seconds. So, yeah, I guess you wouldn't have much choice.
Having a few laughs, throwing plastic explosive down the elevator shaft. Here's...
Fists with your toes.
I got a fan call from a Coverville fan to play.
Oh, good.
Yeah, here you go.
My New Orleans tunes.
There you go.
I loved her.
I wish you could just play that whole scene because she was great.
Well, here's more of her. Here you go.
Don't be a gazoonie, fella.
Don't be a gazoonie.
That was probably my favorite scene in the movie because it was so uncomfortable because she wouldn't come out of the water and she's facing in the other direction. Mm-hmm. And you just feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's a great scene.
Well, here's longer of that.
Excuse me. I was just talking to your husband over there. I was inquiring about a Madame Zora.
Yeah, I knew her before the war. Madame Zora, you say?
Yeah, she was some kind of gypsy fortune teller.
Yeah, she used to have the booth across the boardwalk from me. She weren't no gypsy. She was a debutante.
Debutante. She's terrible.
She had great voice.
When you hear this, man.
She sings, too.
Great voice, but horrible. Boy, horrible acting and some... Definitely some recorded, like the redubbing.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, out there on the bank. That looked like a nasty beach to even be near. It didn't look, mm-hmm. didn't look fun
just
to me.
I felt like those needles were going to wash up any minute from the doc office.
Right there under the Wonder Wheel.
Here's some hot French accent.
Mathilde, vous pouvez nous porter du thé, s'il vous plaît?
Actual French, I guess, not
just. Right. She's asking, by the way, she's saying, do you want me to bring out the good china? And and then Charlotte Rampling says no.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's relevant or not, but it's...
Yeah, and then he goes, well, why not? Because I will give me some of that uli tea.
Oolong.
Well, here are the three teas.
Darjeeling, jasmine, or oolong?
Oolong.
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 Academy Award in 2016.
She asks him if he speaks French, and he says, no, I'm from Jersey. What?
But that was his explanation for everything.
I got to think about chickens. I'm from Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
You don't like chickens up there.
He blamed it on everything.
Yeah.
That's funny. Maybe there's a symbol in that when Brian needs to see it a 13th time to figure out what that is. Here's first meeting with television star Cosby Kid Lisa Bonet. Here you go.
My name's Harry Angel. How are you? I'm a private detective. So what's
Epiphany.
Epiphany.
Yeah.
Your mama left you with a very beautiful name, Epiphany.
Not much else.
Oh,
sweet. But I do leave bread at her grave every day, which is really bringing out the rats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't mind me. I'm just here getting my t-shirt all wet so you can see my nipples.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Nipples were all the rage in 87. What are you talking about?
Big time. Nipples were big, man.
Yeah. Big, especially hers.
Big old, big pepperoni nipples. that's terrible. All right. Here's his first chicken comment.
That was not his first chicken comment.
I promise you.
Were there other chickens?
The egg. When De Niro was eating the egg, I think.
It was the chicken before that, right. It's the whole
movie. He keeps referencing chickens. Thanks.
I have news for this jazz dude. He doesn't know how to say this word. So here you go.
Yeah, I vaguely remember playing with that guy once.
Once.
Once. Well, this is Vigley.
Yeah.
I love him. Yeah, I vaguely remember playing with that guy once.
Once.
Awesome.
Yeah. Says the guy who says bolt with an L.
Exactly. Also, I may have taken this out of context and edited it, but here it is.
Say, are you a dick?
Dick?
Say, are you a dick?
Yes.
This guy, he's great.
I remember Spider. He used to play them drums like two jackrabbits. Got to go, son. I ain't got much time. We'll piss and we'll spit and back to work.
Yeah, he's just bap, 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 boom, boom, boom. Just bap, bap, bap. Get right back to it.
He didn't have time for nothing but casual conversation. I got to go.
And a two sisters drink. Drink two sisters. That's please, here you go. Two sisters. Drink that.
Yeah.
Two sisters cocktails.
Awful lot of straight edge razors in this movie. More than I expected. There were at least two or three occasions where a straight edge was the.
I thought it was just the one. You just see it.
Well, he whips it out and slices.
Lisa Bonet has it or has one.
Has one.
On,
right.
Oh, does
got
she?
The
okay.
Chicken. Yeah.
And then you see the same. He has one. You see Toots Sweets again at the end when, you're seeing the aftermath of all the murders.
Everybody had the same thing in their nightstands. It was always a straight razor, a gun, a Bible, and some other things.
Porcelain dish with beads in it.
Yeah, I mean, everybody had the same thing. Nightstand drawers were like the rage in this movie. Everybody had one, and we were going to see what was in it.
Yep.
And then Mickey Rourke was going to touch all of it. Touch.
Yep.
Every instrument, by the way, that I saw being played, and there were lots of them, because it's in Louisiana, there's going to be lots of Mardi Gras happening at all times. Every instrument I saw, I thought to myself, I don't think that instrument's old enough to be 1955. What really stuck out were the drums in that bar. That drum set, there's no way that was 1955. That was 30 years newer than 1955.
They were pretty good at a lot of the general visuals, like the streets and the cars and the stuff and the clothes and the hairstyles. They all felt good to me, but you're right, there are a couple of times. But
it's funny, the Goofs page on IMDb doesn't mention the drums. It talks about that there's some 1980s vehicles you can see in 1950s Brooklyn.
Yep. They cut from it really fast. Whenever a newer car passes into the shot, they cut away really fast.
Oh, they do mention the drums. The Red Sparkle Premier drums are too modern to have been around 1955.
For sure. Yeah. I didn't know the brand.
Everybody goes, nerd.
When you call, when you dialed a phone in 1956, 1955, you would have actually gone to the operator and then said, give me.
Oh.
You wouldn't have dialed a 7-digit phone number from a payphone.
Right. That's true.
Give me Barney 5.
Even in 58, they were still doing that.
Right. Modern day traffic signals they had in New Orleans.
You kids have no idea. When I used to pick up the house phone and used to hit the little hang up button over and over again, the operator would come on and go, stop that.
Yeah.
Stop
remember
it.
Remember that, right?
Operator, nothing greater scared the shit of a kid than as a child accidentally getting the operator to come online and tell you to stop messing with the phone. It's
holy
like,
crap. Oh. Playing with phones was such a blast, especially in push button. Came out and you could like play songs and you'd sit there stupidly playing songs on the push button phone, not realizing you were calling Jamaica or something.
My grandma was a switchboard operator.
Phone?
Oh, really?
Yeah. She used to run a switchboard. She died in like 98 at the age of 83 or something. So that gives you an idea of her age. But in the, during World War II, that's what her job was while her husband was off fighting the war. Oh. My little old Baptist grandma on the thing going, hold please. Yeah, thank you for calling. Let me forward your throw. Like that whole thing. That's totally her.
I still remember my grandparents' phone number in their little town in Texas out in the middle of nowhere was 14.
Wow. And,
14.
Wow. Yeah.
And, what's your number? 14. No, really.
So,
come on.
So I'm saying that persisted until at least the early 80s because I remember it. I remember being able to dial 14 and get my grandparents.
Sure. It just depends on, I guess, probably area and things. There are probably still some places that are a little bit weird like that.
Would you
and
when Klondike, you could text, give me Klondike.
Right. Yeah.
42917.
Yeah.
When you could text my with 9 digits. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. I remember when, oh gosh, my daughter was so good at the 9 key thing when she got her first phone before we were all into smartphones and stuff. And so she would just, I couldn't believe it. She's tapping out like 3 or 4 paragraphs in a few seconds. I'm like, what the hell are you even doing with that?
A skill that will diminish and die with that generation that no one will ever see again.
No, and she can't do it now. Like, she's already lost it. So that was just, a few years ago? 5, 6 years ago. All right, here's this. I think I played this. Oh, I played it pre-show, so I'll play it for the listeners.
We ain't old Baptists down here, Sonny.
We ain't old Baptists. You never hear that in South Carolina, do you, Brian? Mm. You're all Baptists down there.
I'm just going to go out.
Look, if Randy can make sweeping statements about Utah, I can say all Southerners are Southern Baptists.
Oh, yes.
Oh, and please. Randy can do that too, by the way.
Yeah, no,
I mean, you got to realize that I'm only like 5 miles from the location they filmed this. I mean, it's just right. No, it's not, moron. You're not even close. Yeah. That's way across the
It's way over
state
there.
Country almost.
Yeah.
Right.
It is kind of, I find New Orleans when I've been there the 4 or 5 times I've been there, it feels alien to me. It feels like a foreign alien planet to me.
It is
in lots of ways.
Totally different.
Yeah, different world.
Wait a minute.
Also starring Lisa Bonet.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a sequel?
Yeah,
she went on.
That was her off to college.
Okay,
it's not a sequel. It's a spinoff.
A spinoff. That's right.
But did it happen?
She's Chachi.
Did it happen right after? And they all dressed like early Fresh Prince.
Mm-hmm. It was the 90s. They all dressed like it was the 90s.
Oh, those bad clashing colors and ridiculous open shirts.
No, it wasn't. It was an awakening of revitalization.
I agree. It was a revitalization.
Right. It was bringing back the roots of their styles.
Sure.
Kind of
this reminds me, just a few days ago, I decided to listen to old record, He's the DJ, I'm the Rapper.
Yes.
And it was really good. I really enjoyed listening to it, but it got me thinking, there was a time not long ago, 25 years ago, I guess, when you could make popular music and it was just fun. It was just fun. Right. They were having fun. The reason we have Will Smith as an international superstar for the last 20 years is because he started out having fun making pop music. My question is there anybody doing that nowadays? Is there anything that
Oh, absolutely.
Seriously?
Yeah, I think Pharrell Williams is having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's having fun. Okay. And like that, happy. That song, that's totally him. That's him.
Yeah, but I mean,
fun.
Okay, Uptown
a song.
Funk
but
no, I mean, but look at Uptown Funk. I mean, his stuff is all
Bruno
happy.
Bruno Mars is
Oh,
crazy.
Bruno Mars is... Oh, he really depresses me sometimes.
Really?
He seems like he's having fun. Like, I think this is just generational. They're having... There's also, like, okay, I give my niece a hard time, but her love of, like, you know, One Direction and...
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, One Direction's very funny.
Like, some of that stuff, like the Disney stars that are just barely out of being Disney. I don't mean full-on Cyrus yet, but some of the other ones, like Lovato and...
Mm-hmm. Right.
Who's
right.
the one? Burrito Grande, what's her name?
Ariana Grande.
she's kind of in that vein, like the poppy, happy, synthy stuff. I think it exists.
I get where Randy's coming from, though, because there's stuff like Nightmare on My Street, which was a homage to the Nightmare on the Street songs. And, you know, Charlie Mack, First Out of the Limo, just talking about their lives and just...
Dude had a song called seriously. I Think I Could Beat Mike Tyson. And I just listened to that going, wow, that's just, I don't know who's making that kind of crazy, silly music.
But I also think what you're describing is maybe unique to Will Smith. And I don't know that there would have been a better time for him to do what he did. It was probably perfect timing too, but he's kind of singular in that way. There aren't too many, like even at that time, we weren't quite into full gangster rap mode yet, but we were, you know, we were still in kind of goofy rap mode, but even those guys, most of those guys were a little bit more serious, hard hitting, edgy. And he just wanted to have a fun. And I don't think he's got contemporaries in that way, right. But I don't know that he ever did. Like, I don't know who else, I guess you had Kid and Play and other stupid things.
There was a lot of groups like this. I think that they were just doing it the best at the time. And I remember that stupid freaking tape was so freaking long. It would constantly break because it was over 85 minutes or something worth of music. And did you have any of these, Ibit? Did you have like the album version of any of these albums, like He's the DJ and the Rapper?
Yeah, I had that one. Actually, did I have it back then? I had it. I don't know if I can't remember if I got it then or if I got it now. I think I might have had that on vinyl from Columbia House.
This was a double album.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
How would you guys feel about him? Things have slowed a little bit for his movie career. Something a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit. How would you guys feel about him doing a revival?
He like, did
rap thing.
Yeah,
he did.
He did
a couple years ago, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah,
like a rap album.
Like a rap, like a album where he does raps. Are you
excited? Well, I don't know. We'll hunt that down. If that's true, I wouldn't mind hearing it. Because
they are supposed to be touring together. DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince are supposed to be doing a musical tour together this year.
Randy's not wrong in that it had a I don't know. There's a brightness to that we don't get much of anymore.
Unlike this devil show we watched, devil
and
movie.
By the way, if they play pretty much every song from And In This Corner, I will go to that show.
Nice.
I will happily. Oh man.
I'll bet they play in the OC. Seems like a place they'd show up.
So, yeah, it does. Yeah. It does, actually.
Here's 50s wisdom about cops and no knocking.
The only cops with bad news don't knock.
Only private dicks sleep so late.
Oh, got you there. Only private dicks.
Both idioms that I hear to this day.
Yep.
Right.
By the way, I want this on my tombstone right here.
Asphyxiation by his own genitalia.
There you go.
That was disgusting.
Just carve that.
I like how Mickey Rourke had, or the character Harry Angel had to, could you put that in layman's terms?
Yeah.
I don't know what this genitalia word is or asphyxiation means.
I'm from Jersey and I have browns and chickens.
At first it worried me because the way they described it, the way he said it, I was like, did he wrap his penis around his neck and then choke him with it? And when they said he stuffed it down his throat, I was like, okay, that's feasible. I can see that.
I can see that. Weird. Yeah. The wrap around the neck part, but that's a better
visual. I don't know. So I was like, yeah, in layman's terms, please.
Yeah. I like this guy just interrupts a phone call. This is what he says.
Hey, man, you want a tune?
He's just waiting for a phone in a phone booth and he turns around and guy goes, hey, man, you want a tune?
And he said yes, and they never said what it was.
Right. They never played the tune.
No. Nope. Yeah.
There's a chicken in a bucket. Yeah.
Another chicken in a bucket. Here's Gagging Rourke. There you go.
I can't look at naked dead ladies.
I can't look at the heart I cut out of the lady. You don't hear this quite so casually in 2016 is what I wrote here. I don't remember how offensive this is, but I'm going to play it. So you don't hear this very much today.
Down here, Angel, we don't mix with the jigaboos. The colored folks keep to themselves.
Well, hey. I ain't from down here.
Yeah, from Jersey again.
Where are you from? Tell us again.
Now, you guys may remember on ELR, Brian, you had corrected me once because I thought the word, and I'm not saying this with any malice, okay? I'm just using the word, but I used the word jigaboo on the show because I had confused it and had for years confused it with the word bugaboo, which is like, oh, the whole thing's just a big bugaboo. And I remember saying that on the show, and you and O were like, oh my gosh, is he really saying that word?
We're going to need just a minute as we sidebar.
Sidebar. Right. Pause the show.
Let's take a step back.
So now I no longer use that word because apparently it is very offensive.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And it even came up on TMS when we were talking about the Juggalos.
Oh, right. Yeah. Juggalos. Yes.
Yes.
So Scott's now afraid of every word that sounds like that. It's like, I don't want to get
this
wrong.
Three syllables.
Yeah.
Right.
And a guh sound.
Yeah. Anything with an ugga in it.
Juggalo is okay. Gigolo is okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I wouldn't necessarily say jugaboo, but I don't know what that is.
But jugaboo. Jugaboo sounds wrong too, but
it does.
Here's Angry South.
You play jump rope with Louisiana law, and I'm going to stuff your big city smarts right up your New York ass.
Jeez.
Wow.
Slow down, Chief.
Wait. Can my big city smarts really fit up my New York ass?
No, but if you reverse the roles.
What about my New York smarts and my big city ass?
I like that.
This guy basically says, we don't care if all of the others kill each other all the time. All of the voodoo folk, if they kill each other, we don't care. But now a white lady been killed.
Pretty much.
It's on.
Mm-hmm. It's so weird that you just never arrest him. Like, he's just wandering around the room and you're just talking to him. Hey, choked on his own genitalia. Yeah. How come you did it there, Bill, or whatever? And it's just like, arrest him and give him his rights. What are we living on a weird planet here? Just put cuffs on his arms and say, we think you killed these people.
Did that guy like he want to do any paperwork? No, Scott.
No. He would have liked that.
He wanted to eat some chicken wings.
Yeah, he would have liked that giant vat of gumbo.
Hey, this looks dangerous. We might want to cover this up.
Yup.
Somebody's face is going to end up in it.
Here is, by the way, I've had gumbo. I've cooked gumbo. I've seen it being cooked. No one ever makes it in a giant witch's brew in a shed.
Not that big. We've made it big, but that is like.
It just seems like, and you know, Mickey Rourke demonstrated this, anything could fall into that.
Yeah. Yeah, including
like a crab.
Including the guy's face. All right, here's Mumbo Jumbo.
Just a boy, just a soldier out celebrating New Year's Eve in Times Square.
Who is this soldier?
They took him back to Johnny's hotel, and that's where the ceremony took place.
What ceremony?
The boy was bound naked on a rubber mat. There were complicated incantations and stuff in Latin and Greek. A pentacle was branded on his chest. Margaret handed Johnny a virgin dagger.
Oh, man, that guy was my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, way too much explanation.
There's stuff throughout the whole thing. Yeah. You know, you watch it again, it's like, wow, everybody, there's a lot of scenes where it's just like, all right, I'm getting information from somebody. And it's like they are,
they're
it's
reading.
Right out of a detective novel, noir style, like, oh yeah, well, he was up to no good. I barely remember that name. But let me tell you this 20-minute story about how they did everything up to the minute for that.
Yeah. Mickey Rourke is like jumping up and down. Tell me who it was. Who was it?
I like that he said, and they were reiterating complicated incantations and stuff.
Yeah,
stuff. Yeah. And stuff.
There was definitely some, I really feel like there was definitely some cue card reading, and you'll especially see it in his face because he looks like he's looking off in this one direction and he looks like he is reading.
Totally.
Happens.
Mm. Here's De Niro talking low.
Mephistopheles is such a mouthful in Manhattan, Johnny.
All right. Okay.
Okay, sure, great.
All right. Don't kill or don't what?
I didn't kill Toots.
Oh, there you go.
How could you even say I killed Toots?
All right.
I love Toots.
Those are your sound clips. Now we have this. Oh, look here. It's the Film Sack checklist. We got Cosby Kid Gone Raw. Check. Coke snorting fingernails on De Niro. Check. We didn't even talk about his fingernails very much.
And him and the preacher guy also had like a ring finger one. He had
That was pretty cool. A little Coke finger. Yeah. And then finally, nobody wants to be visited by a hairy angel. Check. Star Trek stuff. There's one guy, Mark L. Taylor. He was one of the voodoo dancers in TNG, played Herataf in the episode Ensigns of Command, and Voyager, he played Jarlath in the episode Displaced. Herataf and Jarlath together at last. I'd give the soundtrack a C for creepy and pretty, holds up pretty well. The heartbeat thing aside, it's a pretty,
it keeps beating.
It's the right tone.
And I slipped a copy of that Girl of My Dreams song by Johnny Favorite into the Dropbox for you.
Did you really? Let's take a look here.
It's in the one I gave you for TMS, TMS covers.
Okay, I'm looking.
If Ice Worm left it be?
It's not there.
Ice Worm's like, what's this trash? Goodbye.
I see a Scott music, but that's something else.
Oh, he did. He got rid of it.
Yeah.
Ice Worm.
Damn it, Ice Worm. You bastard.
All right, well, I'll give it to you again.
All right, lovely.
But not now.
Yeah.
That's what Lisa Bonet said.
Not now, later.
Right.
Let's get to our Twitter post. This is where 140 characters or less, you guys get to sum it up in the only way you know how. Randy, Jordan, let's start with you.
Angel Heart. It has Louis Cipher, Harry Angel, and Epiphany Proudfoot. This isn't a noir thriller. Those are the names of the characters in Brian Dunaway's new comic strip, Gun in a Bush.
True story. That is so gross.
Oh, wow. You really brought it around. That's good. Next up, Brian Dunaway.
Angel Heart, like eating hard-boiled eggs with the devil. Nom, nom, nom. I'm eating your soul right now. Get it? I'm eating your soul. It's good. It's good.
All right. And then finally, Brian Ibbett.
Angel Heart, now that we finally watched this on Film Sack, I can finally take the chronology diagram off my wall with all the red yarn connecting those little photographs.
Oh, good, finally. Because that's been an eyesore for a while, Brian.
It has.
Get rid of that damn thing. Oh, look at this. I have in my hands the alternate titles.
Yes, but you didn't think of Gun in a Bush, did you?
No, I didn't.
No.
Okay.
Who did?
Brilliant.
No
one did.
On there.
All right.
Guy in the alternate titles, we've got Gun in the Hooch. It's not as good as Gun in the Bush. Or Slow Rotating Bar Fans should be the other name of it. Hey, we got an email here from Tom Walter who wrote in and says, thanks for switching up the format of the show by producing a spoiler episode of Star Wars The Force Awakens the other week. I held off on listening to the episode until my 11-year-old nephew and I watched the previous films in order, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3. To get him caught up on the series. That was really nice listening to your thoughts on the movie so soon after it came out, and I hope you produce more episodes like that. Thank you. On a side note, my nephew asked if we could go see the Star Wars movie, and I asked if he had watched the others. He said, there are others. That statement began the journey of watching all of these previous films. and my having to explain why we were watching them in order, in the order that we were. It was a ton of fun watching him realize that, what was going and making connections. I don't know what he means by going. He must have meant going on. That would have ruined it if I had watched them in episodic order or him. Do you not agree? Is that a thing? Thanks, Tom Walter. Yeah, I think you did the right order. Watch it in the way you saw it. 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3. I think that's
right.
Fine.
7 has changed my preferred viewing order.
Give it to us.
The existence of 7 means that I now want to watch, I now want a lot of space between 6 and 7.
Oh.
You know? So instead of ending all of the viewing with 6, now want 6 to, I think 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 7 is good. And maybe even skipping 1 entirely is okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it puts some space between 6 and 7. So then when Han Solo reemerges, you're like, yay.
Yeah.
Instead of, I just saw him a minute ago.
Right. Yeah, like 5 seconds ago.
He was just frozen in the.
Well, in the 6, he's just chilling with a bunch of tiny people in suits, right? Like that's Yub Yub, yeah. Singing the Yub Yub song, or used to. We had one phone call. This came to us from dude, I don't have his name, so I'm going to just play his thing. So here's his clip right here.
Hello, film sack people. This is Marlon, the guy from Trinidad. And I'm probably your first caller from the beautiful Twin Island Republic of Trinidad and Tobago. I wanted to comment about game developers / designers who I would love to see make a movie. And I have two guys for you. First up, Ken Levine of Bioshock fame. He already is a screenwriter, possible, and I know he's doing, I think, Logan's Run. I would love to see him helm probably, I don't know, a Bioshock or something like that. The second one is an obvious one that I think you guys missed out, and I could imagine him doing a Who Framed Roger Rabbit Part 2. And when I say the name, you could see the characters that would be in it. Shigeru Miyamoto. I would love to see Shigeru Miyamoto being allowed to just go wild or go crazy and bring Mario and all those characters to the big screen.
Yeah, I can see that.
So love the show. Love what you guys do. Keep up the good work.
All right. Nice. I love that accent, by the way.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, it's funny because we talked about it with Wing Commander. We talked about Chris Taylor's directorial debut and, you know, for good or for ill. Chris Taylor. Who am I thinking? Oh, he's the RTS guy, Chris Taylor. Yeah. Different Chris. Mm. Other game designer. But anyway, and it got me to thinking, first of all, great call, great choices, but I wanted to let everybody know there's something rad coming up due to some connections on the inside. There will be some standalone interviews coming to the show. One, which I think will be the first one, will be an interview with the two co-directors of the new Kung Fu Panda movie coming out.
Really?
Nice. Yes. And after that, and this is subject to change because, you know, you never know how this stuff's going to go, so I don't want to get too committee on this, but it looks like I will get the opportunity to interview Duncan Jones about the Warcraft movie.
Oh, wow. Yay.
Which is very exciting, and we've decided the Film Sack is the home for this. Like, this is where this stuff should be, so it kind of answers the first guy's email saying more cool stuff like that as offshoots on the show, but also, you know, it got me thinking about it because we're talking about video games and who would be good directors. Does anyone else around here have, like, a favorite game designer you think would make a great movie director, or at least you'd like to see them try? I can't think of anyone off the top of my head.
Ken Levine's a great one, and that does seem like one, yeah. I would love to see a Thief movie.
Thief would be great.
That would be fun. I'm with you. The Bioshock would be a perfect movie.
Yeah. It seems like it, right? Correctly. Just like lends itself perfectly to that.
Yeah, that underwater stuff and like mm-hmm. that empty city, and just you could make a really creepy, cool movie out of that.
I'd love to know what Tim Schafer would do with a movie.
Sure.
Like you know, like he's talking about like a Roger Rabbit-esque film.
Mm-hmm.
I just think he's so interesting that I'd like to know what. But maybe
kickstart it and it would make millions. That's what. Yeah.
Pixels kind of that movie, but I would like to see it done without Adam Sandler. Is that what we're saying?
No, I mean like here's what I want. Schafer could do. He could do Pixar level comedy. Like he's really good with comedy with his games. So you take any one of his things, Day of the Tentacle, or even better yet, like Psychonauts, which just got a sequel kickstarted or, you know, crowdfunded. a Psychonauts movie would be really, really fun. I think Tim Schafer is a good pick. He'd be a strong contender.
I think we too often think of the director as having everything to do, like as being responsible for every word and every note and so on. And it's just not true. Like when you ask this question,
have the vision.
Sure, yeah. Sure. But you know, like if they've got a bad script and the director doesn't get someone to fix it, it's admittedly his fault, but it's also the writer's faults, you know?
Yeah.
And when you ask this question, I think of Anthony Birch, you know, the guy who wrote Borderlands and Borderlands 2, and he's been writing a TV show called Rocket Jump.
Oh, right. The one with the guy from Provo. Can't think of his name. Anyway.
Gosh, when you
Provo guy.
Back, I have no idea.
He's famous on YouTube.
Freddie Wong.
Freddie Wong, there you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think of Anthony Birch. He's a writer. He didn't develop video games. He developed really funny one-liners and stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't need him to direct a movie. I just need him to be responsible for it being good.
Just be involved.
Yeah.
Be tangibly, constructively involved.
So we think maybe a supervisor kind of role, like a tech supervisor, like a continuity supervisor, something like that, as opposed to being a director. Because a director is someone who has to wrangle people and has to have a vision.
And has to motivate a good take every time.
Right.
Yeah, they can't all be. J.J. Abrams is a weird egg. He can write well and he can also direct well. That's kind of odd. I'd rather have, for the most part, you want to have a really strong director who's got an amazing writer.
Yeah,
and have them collaborate well. So.
And then you go over to video game developers, and they're just a totally different breed. Like one of my favorite philosophical video game developers of all time is Dustin Browder. He's got no business directing a movie. He makes really interesting video games. He makes these decisions about how a video game plays. You know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, now that you're mentioning Blizzard people, like think of it as the relationship that Duncan Jones and the rest of Legendary have with, say, Metzen, who essentially birthed all the characters that will be shown in the Warcraft movie, or a lot of it anyway. You know, you want him there as a creative consultant and sort of your source material, but you don't necessarily want to take Chris and have him direct the thing. I don't think he would want to. You know, he'd rather see his characters come to life through the skilled hands of Zoe Bowie.
I can't imagine directing a movie. Like, every time I think about it, it just sounds like a 24/7 job that goes on for 18 weeks and that requires that you do nothing but direct.
It's a beast, man. It's a beast. Speaking of beasts, what's our next movie? Daylight? What the hell is Daylight? What is Daylight?
You asked last time, too.
Yeah, it's Sylvester Stallone
still
in a tunnel.
Stallone. Yeah.
Oh, right. I actually look forward to that because I haven't seen it. And I think I said that last time, too.
if it still holds up to my memory, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was just a lot of fun.
Aeon Flux coming up after that. Well, Blow Dry we've inserted, so we're going to do Blow Dry after Terminator.
we've inserted Blow Dry. Like a gun and Lisa Bonet's...
Hey-o!
Constantine. Oops. I think we should move Constantine up. I think we should go... Here's what I think we should do, and we can do this off air too, but I like Daylight, Terminator, Blow Dry, Constantine, Aeon Flux. Ooh, is Catwoman still on this list?
Well, not anymore, but it was.
I think Brian took that bullet for us.
Exactly. If we're going to do a Catwoman ever,
yeah,
it has to be within the next few weeks because I'm not going to watch it again.
Yeah, you're just going to have to go by memory, dude. I wouldn't blame you.
Right.
Terrible film. Well, in that case, I don't mind. We just don't want to make Brian watch it again.
How bad can it be?
It's bad.
Oh, that's what I thought. I went into the movie with those exact words.
Yeah. How you were wrong.
It was answered for me pretty quickly.
If you want to send your own emails to us, it's real simple, filmsack@gmail.com, or you can send voicemails to that, like that guy did, to 801-471-0462. If you've got more Trinidadians who want to call in, is that what they call them? Trinidadians?
Yeah, Trinidadians, yeah.
Trinidadians. Use that number, 801-471-0462. That's going to do it for us. Filmsack.com is the website. Find us on Twitter @FilmSack and leave us reviews on iTunes and Stitcher and wherever you consume the show. Because we love that and it helps us grow. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
I got to go grow now.
Aw, yeah. Fans spin it backwards. show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Wow.
Yeah.